welcome, everybody, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. Thank you so much for tuning in. Glad to have you aboard. We do want to start with a couple of plugs at the top of the show, as always. Please do me the favor and follow us on Twitter. That is @YankeesandGravy on Twitter, as well as if you're interested in checking out where you could subscribe to the podcast. It is on iTunes. It's very simple. All you do on your mobile device, anywhere you want to look, just download the podcast app, and then once you do that, you can open that app and you can find Yankees and Gravy. And basically, every time we make a new episode, you will be able to see it. It'll pop up. Basically, you just have to refresh the page. That's the easiest way to listen to it. You can put it on your phone, on your iPad, anything, on your home computer. You can listen to it on your headphones on the way to work. Hopefully, you guys will do that. Also, we have a Facebook page that we're using right now. It's called Yankee Gravy. There's no end. Yankee Gravy. It's just search for that on the. If you see Yankees and Gravy, that is still me. But I'm not really using that because it's a fan page. And it's very, very difficult to, at the level that I'm at right now, to just get droves and droves of followers. I do have over 1,000 people on the Yankee Gravy page. So please just go Yankee Gravy and send a friend request, and I will accept you. Also, if there are any questions or anything, write to me at Gmail. I really, really would like this to be interactive. It is yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. Can't get any more simple than that. Also, what else is there? SoundCloud, Yankees and Gravy on SoundCloud. That is about it. Those are the ways you could find me. Hopefully there's going to be more. I say this each and every week. I want this to be as interactive as possible. So please write me, please comment, and let's make this fun. Again, one of the only, it's a little contradictory right now, but one of the only multiple times a week Yankee podcasts that comes from an offbeat, irreverent fan point of view. So I'm hoping you guys really, really enjoy this. I know it's been a little while, and I do apologize. I'm not proud of my inactivity, but I was in. I took a little vacation. I went down to Florida to see some friends. It's a long story with that. It's not that long of a story. If you're around by the end of this podcast, I will kind of go into a little bit of detail on what happened. But I do want to start this off talking about the Yankees. So let's get into it. State of the Bombers, as we've been kind of starting most of the shows with. Very, very simple, guys. This team, I think we've leveled off a little bit from the up, down, the extreme up, the extreme down. We seem to have established that is not wood, but that is, you know what, I'm not even going to take a chance. I'm going to find some wood and knock on, hold on. That's me knocking on wood, because we seem to have established a little bit of consistency with this team. And I'm just saying we haven't been going on those 8 out of 9 losing streaks or those 10 out of 12 winning streaks and really, really just wondering what the hell this bipolar team is all about. We seem to be kind of, we just left Oakland. Today it's 7-10, July 10th, and yesterday we beat Oakland in a getaway game, and we took 2 out of 3. That's what we want to start seeing, guys. If we want to be the team we think we can be, and a team that's going to be a serious threat, we have to just consistently win series. That's what we need to do. So they are up 3 games, first place in the AL East. Exciting stuff. The most competitive division in baseball, I think, gets a lot of it takes a lot of knocks, but I know there's other divisions with like these crazy, incredible teams, with 48 wins, 46. Listen, 50 wins. Listen, the Yankees, this division doesn't have any teams that are less than 40 wins, and I don't think, I know. There's no other division that doesn't have a team with less than 40 wins. Every team in the American League East has over 40 wins. Even, look who's coming, look who's 8-2 in their last 10, the Boston Red Sox. That's a little scary. You definitely, if you're asking me right now, I don't know. Just because I was always the guy that, even before 2004, before they freaking won it, and I hate bringing up that year because that was, any Yankee fan. I don't know what hurts more, 2004 or 2001 as a Yankee fan. But even before 2004, I always looked at the Red Sox with a high level of respect. No, they hadn't won in freaking 80 years, whatever it was, but they were always competitive. The games were always fiery. You always had to seem to have that mirror baseball player, like when it was Donnie, they had Wade Boggs. You know, you had Joe DiMaggio versus Ted Williams. You know, I think Mickey Mantle and who the hell was that guy? Whatever, I don't know. I'm just saying, they always had a swagger about them. They always had somebody, Bob Feller, Carlton Fisk, Jim Rice, all these, you know, all these guys. Carl Yastrzemski, that's who I was thinking of. I think he wasn't, I think the Mick was definitely older than him significantly, but I think they crossed paths a little bit. But they always just seem to be this thing with the Red Sox where the word is not fear, but it's respect. You always respect it. And then, you know, those days when Pedro and A-Rod and Posada and, you know, all those guys, you know, Manny, all those guys were going back and forth. What a rivalry, man. So that's just inherently, even though they're in the basement right now, they're only five games out now of first place. Five games. That means they're only two games out more than the second place team, which right now, who is it? It is the Orioles, I think, right? Who's the second place team? Yeah, I think it's the Orioles. But it doesn't really even matter. Everybody's so close together. It's tough. The Rays and the Blue Jays have not been playing well lately. The Yankees have been playing about average, 5-5 the last 10. It's just a little more consistency that we're seeing out of this team. You like to see how good we are at home. You would like to see us do a little bit better on the road. We have to kind of shape up our, you know, when we go away, we got to shape things up a little bit more. As far as what we need, I think the need is obvious. I think if you want to talk about, you know, right now, if going to war right now with this team, I don't think we have what it takes to win a World Series. I do love that we got our boys back, Ellsbury and Miller, but even still, I think ideally we'd get a few pieces to add in, but realistically, the bare minimum to be able to say let's make a run, I think we are going to need a top line starting pitcher. Maybe not an ace, maybe not a number one, but a two or a high three, solid innings eating, reliable starting pitcher. If we're going to have a chance at this thing. And I feel like we're going to do that. I think Cashman even said it. He said, you know, and maybe he won't because maybe they just didn't think this team was going to be that good. I don't know. It's just, I don't think a lot of people saw this team being three games up in the Eastern Division at the All-Star break, which is approaching. We're not at the All-Star break yet, but we're getting there. Maybe we're surprising the fan base. Maybe we're surprising ownership. Cashman made that statement saying, hey, if these guys can prove that they can hang close, we'll go out and get what we need for them. Now, Cashman, you got to make good on that promise. I said it a few podcasts ago. You're not ever guaranteed to be in this position. Look at the freaking New York Knicks. You know what I mean? You're not ever guaranteed a good shot at the title. And anytime you have a shot at the title, and why the fuck not? Why do they? How could you say that they don't have at least a shot right now? You know what? You got to take that shot because you don't know where you're going to be next year. But that's what I think as far as needs go. I think it would be a starting pitcher. A second, I would say I wouldn't even say a 1A. I would say a definite 2. A little bit of distance between the first and second need. I would say we could use a reliable bat / middle infielder. Hopefully you find that piece in the same person. Didi and Drew are still not cutting it. Who said it? So I think somebody, I think it was Mark Feinstein said, Drew is like, it's like Groundhog Day with him where, you know, he just knows every time we're about to cut him or any time that we just can't handle him anymore is just because his average is whatever it is, 160, 140, 170, whatever the hell it is. He knows that, he almost knows that he's got to do something big. And that Wednesday home run he hit was absolutely huge. I said it before, guys. I don't know. I came into the year saying this guy, before the year started, I said, this guy is not a professional hitter. He's not a major league baseball hitter anymore, and we shouldn't be relying on him. And I still say it, but you cannot ignore the fact that he's hitting these big-time home runs in big spots. That would have been a disaster on Wednesday. Andrew Miller comes back off the injury, and that home run that he gave up, that was a two-run home run that only gave us a one-run lead, would have tied the game up had Stephen Drew not hit that home run at the top of the inning. Was it the bottom of the inning? Bottom of the inning. So Stephen Drew is just doing what he does to keep himself on this team. If you still listen to Girardi, Girardi will say he is the unluckiest man in baseball because he's hitting the ball right at people all the time. Bullshit, Joe. This guy, I'm going to say, the guy's average is atrocious. Not that of a Major League Baseball player. But, for lack of better, alternatives, and the fact that he is hitting some seriously clutch home runs and playing solid defense, he's still in this team. And we're three games above first place. I'm not bitching so much about Stephen Drew because we're three games above first place. I think, yeah, we will have to also address middle infield because freaking Gregorius isn't that good either. He's picked it up in the field. It looks okay, but I've seen a couple of at-bats in the last few times I've watched him where he also looks overmatched and, no offense, but less than a major league hitter. But you do like what you see, in the field from him. Speaking of cutting it, Chase Headley, I don't know. You guys like this guy? I don't know. I just think he's just the type of guy that's just there. I don't know. He had a couple of big home runs. He's not a big home run hitter anymore. He had one or two years where he was. But whatever, he's hurt. He's got a calf that's bothering him. We're still talking about him being one of the worst third basemen in baseball. Again, this is, you know, it's totally psychological. There's no way around it. I had the same thing, guys. When I played, I was a freaking shortstop. And I was always, up there with the better shortstops in the town. Even when we'd play all-star games, I would always basically start, and I just got a little older and I lost control of my throwing. I couldn't zero in on the first baseman anymore. And once that happens a couple of times, it's just in your head. It never was fixable for me. I had to move to the outfield. And even then, I would throw it into the cutoff guy. It doesn't have to be as accurate when you're in the outfield. You could just kind of hit the cutoff guy, and the cutoff guy has obviously some room to use his feet and get to the ball. But I just, I never lost the magic stick, though. Could always hit. But the throwing was, I can relate. Steve Sachs had it. Mackie Sasser had it. They call it the yips. I don't know what the hell it is. But Headley's also botching freaking, he's Olaying ground balls. He's getting out of the way. Last year he was just a beast in the field. I'm hoping he can conquer this. But Chuck Knobloch had it. We'll see what happens, though. But he's hurt. He's hurt right now. Calf is still bothering him. He's got this guy, Figueroa, was called up to replace him. He's not so much of a prospect anymore. I mean, when you're 28 years old, you kind of fall into that, class quadruple A player if you're really good, but you don't seem to be the best. You're not really doing your thing when you get called up and you're just consistently good at triple A. That must be a very sad place to be. You know what I mean? Like, you're too good for the minors, not good enough for the majors. You hear that happening a lot. And I don't know. He had a good date the other day. His Yankee debut, two extra base hits. Nobody had done that since Johnny Damon in 2006, basically having their Yankee debut consist of multiple extra base hits in that first game. But, it is what it is. Figure out, hopefully he maybe, you know, I think he said one thing he did say. He says, you know what, I'm more relaxed. I'm not a kid anymore. I don't have this crazy ambitions. I've gone up. I've gone down, been sent back up, sent down, and I don't really take a lot of pressure to it. Maybe this guy, and you know, you're just grabbing at straws here, maybe this guy is just going to find his rhythm and find his range because he is relaxed. I don't know. I don't see them replacing Headley, even though Headley's kind of just kind of taking up space and he's not doing it. As far as, I mean, in the field, he's hurting us. At the bat, you know, was he hitting 250, 6-7 home runs, whatever? Not killing it, not blowing it, just is what it is. If this guy Figueroa can be a little dynamic and, you know, they're never going to replace Headley for what he's being getting paid with a guy like Figueroa. But if Figueroa can make himself, get some attention and maybe stay on the team, well, you know what? Headley, you could take a couple of days off, and then we get the spark with this guy in, an improvement to the team. I don't know if this guy can play up the middle, though. You know what I mean? If he could play up the middle, that's another option, too. You know, we'll see what happens. But that's it. We'll see what happens there. I want to say congratulations to Brett Gardner. Made the All-Star team. I don't know, man. Do you guys like this freaking fan stuff? I have no problem with letting the fan have some. First of all, the whole All-Star game situation is a disaster. The fact that it determines who gets home field advantage in the World Series, that's no good, guys. That's a joke. I mean, that is a panic, knee-jerk reaction to that, I guess, couple-year period where then you had that one All-Star game that ended in a tie. All-Star games are All-Star games. You're not going to force people to be interested in them. You can't do it. Yes, baseball did have one of, if not the best, All-Star game in all the major sports. Basketball is fun to watch, but it's just a freaking track meet. Pro Bowl, forget it. They shouldn't even have it. And hockey, it's just so far removed from what the actual hockey game is because it's just a little bit of a love fest compared to, you know, when they're actually wanting to rip each other's heads off in the real games and even worse in the playoffs. Baseball was really cool because you got to see everybody interact with each other. You get to see players that you don't normally else see. Francesa said it, and I know I say it a lot too, but Francesa made the good point of the All-Star game used to be really popular because of that. You never got to see a lot of these guys play. Now in this information world where just content is everywhere and you could watch highlights at your fingertips on your phone while you're going to work of anybody in the game at any time, it's naturally not as as much of a phenomenon as you would think because you can see these guys whenever you want. I remember when I was watching All-Star games and I could watch Joaquin Andujar play or some of these guys in the National League that I normally wouldn't get a chance to watch. It was fun for me. They used to wear their own uniforms, seeing all these guys representing their own uniforms on a field, and it had a better feel to it. But listen, it's different now. They made some changes. The game's moved on. Life has moved on. You can't force interest in this game, and it is what it is. They never used to have a home run derby. Now they have a home run derby. You know, that should be enough. If you can't market the game, then you can't market the game. Then have it, and hopefully people enjoy it. If they don't, that is what it is. Don't take the World Series and, you know, take these two teams who have guys who hardly any of them would even have anything to do with the All-Star game, and they're affected. You can't do that. That's got to go. Speaking of other things I don't like, I was about to get into before, the Gardner issue. I don't like the, you want to let the fans pick. They should either pick the whole thing or, you know, for the reserves or whatever, or have it be consistent. These hardcore promotions by these teams, any way you looked around Yankee Stadium, any way you looked on social media, get Guardian or something, whatever the hell the hashtag was. And it's uncomfortable. If I was the player, it would be uncomfortable. You know that asshole Nick Swisher? He loved it when they did it with him. And he's freaking, I'm at the game and, you know, it's vote Swish or whatever, you know, hashtag get Swish in or whatever it was. And they put him on the Diamond Vision. And this guy, if you ever heard him talk, he got voted number two. And this is going back, he was still in the Yankees, so it's a couple years. but he actually got voted number two fakest guy in baseball. I didn't know if he was fake or not. All I do know is when you listen to an interview from Nick Swisher, if this guy is not completely over the top, front, you know, trained, I mean, just schooled in the art of how to be media savvy, I don't know who is, because it does come off fake. It almost, like I say, it almost comes off too fake to where I think maybe that's just him, because I feel like nobody could be that fake. Nobody could fake it that much. But check out Nick Swisher. But he was like basically doing his basically on the Diamond Vision, pleading for a chance to be in this All-Star game. And I just think that's tacky. You know what I mean? I just let these guys play. I think Gardner handled it great. He, you know, he made a response. All he said was, "Yeah, it's going to be weird." Wow, why is it going to be weird, Brett? Well, because it's the first time I'm going to have a jersey with my name on the back. And I'm like, that's cool as hell. Just love watching Gardner play, man. He's just, I mean, man, home runs. What a complete baseball player you're talking about. It's amazing, too, because he always showed flashes. And maybe this is still just a flash, and maybe he'll end up hitting 240 again. Not 240, but 259, 255, you know, whatever it is. The guy's always been such a streaky player. But I cannot remember a stretch like of him playing this well. You know, he's really, really – he can hit your home run whenever he wants. He can steal your base, get your base hit. He can make a diving play in the outfield. He's playing like a five-tool player. You know, and how old is he right now? 30? I forgot. I'm not sure. Let me see how old Brett Gardner is. I don't have the ESPN thing up now, but I'll look. Let's see. Give me a second. I don't know if this was the right move, but we're already in too deep, so we're going to do it. Brett Gardner, 31 years old. So, that's it. You know, his career is a career 268 hitter. You got to remember, that's skewed up pretty heavy for this year because he is hitting 303. So, he's probably around a career 260 hitter, 259. 303, 10 home runs, 40 RBIs, and a 381 on-base percentage. Cheers to Brett Gardner. Very, very happy for him. He absolutely deserves this All-Star appearance. And, Brett Gardner, you are now an all-star baseball player. Good for you. Starting pitching, let's get into it. I mean, it is what it is. I just want to run through each guy. Let's start with Sabathia. He had that procedure where he had some fluid drained from his knee. That's good. I mean, he's going to probably need that. That condition he had, I don't know exactly what it's called, but most people were saying it's basically what it is arthritis. And just him overall is such an interesting thing because, man, I have to say this. I think this guy's going to make it. I think he's going to have a couple of more good years. I think this is a transition year for him. I think he really, really is learning to pitch. I do watch him out there, and I do, like I said before, I watch the look in the eyes of these people, and I do feel like Sabathia is about business, and I do feel like this guy, aside from, you know, having the tools of an all-time Hall of Famer, you know, in his heyday, he does have heart, and he does have the desire, and he wants to make this happen. He's got to freaking find a way, and I think – I really do think he will. I think he'll still – will pitch shitty. I still think he may not even finish the season in the Yankee rotation because I think we have to get somebody else who's good, and right now if we're going to, you know, nick somebody right now, it's got to be Sabathia. But I really do think by the end of this year, sometime, he's going to figure this out. And next year, he's going to have an okay year. And I think he'll maybe have one, two more years of a good, solid, you know, Andy Pettit-type years, you know, just finding out what works for him and how to battle out there and how to get through these innings. I do think he has the desire to do that. But as far as this year goes, yes, you're dealing with a 500 pitcher at best. Whether he's going to get a quality start or not. He's not a guy who you're going to rely on in a big spot right now, but he's eaten some innings for you. And, you know, he can go out there and he could throw. He could pitch. And that's what he always was able to do. It's just in the past, he was able to do it a lot more effectively, a lot more quality to the innings that he would eat. Tanaka, he's been roughed up lately, but he looked great today. watching him today, you thought, well, here we go, we're in trouble again. And I saw somebody tweet, too. They were like, can this guy just have the freaking surgery already? Oh, what's the end result? Two-hitter today. The guy pitched a freaking two-hitter. He had an okay outing, his last outing, and then a couple of clunkers before that. So it is a little scary. You don't know what you're going to get all the time. But he's another guy who, you know what, you see him and he battles. Even today, when he looked like he may be in the second inning, when it looked like he may be getting roughed up and it was just going to be like, oh, my God, how long we got with this guy? Should he have the surgery? Can he freaking even pitch? The guy can pitch. He dominated for most of the game today. And it's a testament to him, too, because it didn't look like he had his stuff. And he found it. He hung in there. Eovaldi is still up and down. He's been up lately, though. You know what I mean? You just don't want to, you know, again, what they say about this guy. You know, the guy's been on three different teams. How many 25-year-old pitchers who can throw 99 miles per hour have been through three or four teams before they're 25? So that's a little bit of a red flag. We were very, very hopeful that Rothschild would be able to find something with him. And hopefully he did. He's been up lately, and he's been looking good, and he's been improved. Hopefully, you know, it's not just a matter of him being on the upside of the ups and downs. Hopefully he really is getting to where he needs to be. Pineda looking good the past few. He's one of the most talented baseball players on this freaking team, along with Dellin Betances, Brett Gardner, Mark Teixeira. And Jacoby Ellsbury. But, you know, we need him. And he's got to have an attitude adjustment. When he came here first, before he had all those injuries, I even said, you know, this guy cracked under the pressure of the media. He kind of didn't see. I was worried about his mindset, basically. And it seemed like he may not have the makeup emotionally to pitch in New York. I think he does. I think he's come a long way. I think he's made strides. But he has to learn that thing that we just talked about with Sabathia, Tanaka, Pettit. When he doesn't have his A game, when he doesn't have that slider, he's got to be out there and he's got to be battling. Even Susan Wallman, you know, wacky chick, but she knows the Yankees, and, you know, she even said it too. She's like, something about this kid that's just, you just see him, you know, the body language, something out there. He just doesn't feel right. He doesn't look like he wants to be there anymore. He looks like he's laboring, and I've seen it too. And it is scary because, like, you know, you watch him labor out there, and you're like, is he freaking hurt? Is he tired, or is he just not conditioned? No, it's just when he doesn't have his good stuff, particularly the slider, he is he's not the same guy, and it's almost like he doesn't want to be out there. Nova's still solid. He hasn't touched the level of that first start back, and somewhat concerning, each appearance has been a little less quality than the next, but he's still out there. What are you expecting from Nova right now? Three or four starter, you know? And he's definitely not disappointing at that level. Like we talked about before, we're going to need another starter if we're going to think we're going to go on a serious run. Miller and Ellsbury returned on the 8th. Miller almost blew the first game back, but Stephen Drew bailed him out, as we talked about. And Ellsbury's back in the mix. He looks good. You know, he's not tearing the cover off the ball yet. I love watching Ellsbury hit, man. He hits screaming line drives. Not even necessarily that have any threat to go out of the ballpark, but just screaming line drives. Just measures them up and just been a lot of times they're right back up the middle. A lot of times doubles in the corners, but I just love when he's on, he's locked in. He's just hitting freaking ropes that probably never get higher than like 8 to 10 feet, but just good solid level swing and just hits the ball hard. Love watching him. A-Rod, our buddy, did not make the All-Star team. Let's just talk. Oh, first of all, the fan. I forgot this guy's name, thankfully. I know I said it like 6 times on the last podcast, but whatever. The Yankees reached an agreement with this freaking guy. $150 to the charity. And to the fan's credit, who I did give a hard time before, and I still think the guy is just a little bit too much. You know, need to freaking have this whole huge public freaking, you know, crusade about, you know, how the talks are going. And, you know, this is how the world is now. Everybody's a professional. Everybody's a professional member of the media. Everybody knows how to say the perfect soundbite. And this guy was doing the same thing. Wrote a book on how to freaking chase down home run balls in the outfield. I mean, damn. Like I said, just congratulations to him on that, because basically, you know, anybody who wants to, learn, if there is an art to that, this guy writes a book and then afterwards backs up the fact that he has the credibility to write a book by catching A-Rod's 3,000th hit, which was, of course, a home run. But anyway, the guy got $150,000 donated to his charity, and he got a bunch of memorabilia and tickets and non-monetary stuff. So I'm glad to see that that's over. I didn't want this to be dragged out. I thought it was going to be a little bit more, but it seems like the guy loosened up a little bit. Good for him. A-Rod, all-star snub? I don't think so, guys, right? I mean, he had a great year, and you can make a case for numbers of him, a guy having those types of numbers, to be able to get into the all-star game. But, you know, the guys who were above him were legitimately above him, and they were better. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Truth is also, I think A-Rod probably could use the rest. And you heard this here, and you know I'm big on my predictions. After the All-Star break, I got a feeling A-Rod is going to hit a few dingers coming right out of that break, because I think it'll feel good for him to get his legs under him a little bit and get that break. The guy's 39 years old, and they probably had no intention of playing him as much. Same thing with Jeter, like last year. They probably had no intention of playing A-Rod this much, but it's just been the point where he's needed. He's, you know, second to Teixeira, probably now third Gardner, because of Gardner's just, you know, all around, but certainly in power numbers, slugger type stuff, he's second to Teixeira. That's it. And then overall offense, yeah, you probably put Gardner up ahead of him because Gardner's become just such an all around force. But A-Rod, man, he's an essential part of this team, and a few days rest in the All-Star break probably will do everybody pretty good, especially him. Yankee stuff, that's all I got for this week. I'm not going to lie to you, I've been out of the loop a little bit. I went on a vacation to South Florida. This was what a disaster. This is, if you know anything about me, I'm into cruises. And I, you know, my first cruise was maybe like 4 years ago. And as pathetic as it is, and I know a lot of people would be like, you know, overfed, nearly dead, you know, just that's all, only slobs, and people go to cruises, they herd you around like cattle. Oh, listen, I'm here to tell you all the freaking rumors and stereotypes about cruising are true. I work my ass off in the freaking nightlife business, and long late hours, craziness, wacky stuff, you know, just high paced. So my love for cruising is because I don't necessarily need to go to Miami or to freaking Spain and see the coolest nightclubs and eat at the fanciest restaurants and, you know, live that crazy. I do that while I'm at work, and I live in it while I'm at work. So cruising for me is the opportunity for me just to – and I cruise out of New York too, so I don't freaking double fly it. So, I mean, I don't double up on my transportation, meaning that the cruise ship is a form of transportation, and so is the way you get to the cruise. Now, I walk or take a cab a few blocks away from where I work and get on this freaking vessel that just takes me to Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, St. Martin, Turks and Caicos, wherever you want to go, wherever the cruise is going. So I just and then once you get on that boat, you're done. You unpack once, you put your feet up. You want to go to a show, you go to a show. Comedy. You don't got to rent a car. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to deal with reservations. You don't have to pay up charges for bottles at nightclubs. Nothing. It's all right there for you. And yes, I'm freaking 40. So you know what? I'm done, and I'm happy just to go on these cruises. So ever since I went on these cruises, my friends in Florida have given me a hard time because I lived in Florida maybe like, what was it? Damn, 15, 16 years ago. Made some good, solid, lifelong friends in West Palm Beach. And I haven't really seen them anymore because I used to take my vacation and go down to Florida for a few days. Now I've been doing these cruises. I haven't done that for a while. So I figured, you know what? I'm overdue. They give me a hard time. Let me do a land-based vacation and let me go down to Florida. So I go down to Florida. Booked the cruise. I got friends in Fort Lauderdale. I got friends in West Palm Beach. I'm all over the place. So I'm staying with my friend. He tells me he's got another friend staying there. He waits till I get there to tell me that. So then I stay there. We're living like collegiates in a dorm room. Then I go to Then I go to Fort Lauderdale, stay with my other friend in Fort Lauderdale. A few wacky things happened there. Stayed there for a couple of nights. I don't need to get into it. Just whatever. Just weird stuff happened. All right, I'll tell you. Just guy. I have a friend down there, and she's a young lady who, you know, we used to have very, how would you put it, an unofficial relationship with, but it was semi-physical or whatever. But I was trying to catch up with her. We were trying to meet. Nothing. That's a long time ago. All that stuff is done and finished. But trying to meet up, trying to say hi, you know, just catch up just to kind of meet for a quick drink because it wasn't going to be like a long-term thing anyway. She had to get up for work early in the morning. It just would be a shame if I came all that way and we didn't at least bump into each other. We never bumped into each other. Fine, whatever. Get a call at like 2:30 in the morning from her boyfriend. Then he's not a call, a text. One wants to freaking fight me or whatever, this and that. I don't know. It was getting late, and it was getting late, and we just had a back and forth. It was weird. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I'm just telling you about, I guess, my little mini vacation. So I guess the fourth day in, I noticed that there was this mini cruise line out of Palm Beach. So I went back up to Palm Beach, grabbed another friend, got on the cruise ship, took a cruise, a three-day cruise, and went to the Bahamas. So my land-based vacation ended up consisting of a cruise right in the middle of it anyway. Point of the story is that I had about a 6-7 day vacation that just really was not much of a vacation. I was on the run the whole time. Came back way, way, way more tired than I was when I first went on the vacation. I hadn't had a chance to follow much of the Yankee stuff while I was there, but I would check in on ESPN as much as frequently as I could. I would catch whatever I could, and then when I came back 2 days ago, I obviously immersed myself as much as I can back in the mix now. Happy to be back with you guys, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back at you within a couple of days. Thanks again.